Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
What time did you guys leave this morning?
We were on the bus at 6:15, and I think we took off from Santa Maria at around 9.
That's not so bad.
Yeah, so it's like almost seven here, so about 6:30. Yeah, so fair time change.
So, 48 hours ago, you were watching the women's game. Your team was at the Honda Center watching the women's game, watching the end of it, kind of getting ready for your guys' game. Talk about what the last 48 hours have been like for you.
Hectic. That's kind of a good word I like to use for it. It's just, you know, watching the girls play, being where we were last year with a close game against Pacific and falling short. It kind of hurt last year. And these past 48 hours of ups and downs that we've had, it's been a roller coaster, and I've loved every minute of it. Winning the championship and celebrating my teammates and going back to campus and going to Firestone, it's been all so surreal. So,
Talking with sophomore forward Zach Gordon for Cal Poly, played 20 minutes in the conference title game, didn't take a shot, got 6 rebounds and a steal, and played defense most of the time on Maxwell for Northridge. Zach, can you talk about that last charge play? It wasn't on Maxwell, it was on their other big. Can you describe it to me and what happened on that play?
Yeah, I was just guarding, I believe it was Maxwell. I think, if my memory serves me correctly, I saw him slip behind me. But at the top of the 3-point line, I saw Green start driving right. And as he started to drive, their other big, Hale Emerson, started to slip. And I knew that once he caught the ball, with the amount of time that was on the game and the kind of player that he is, he wasn't going to stop. So I just kind of shuffled my feet over, got in defensive position, and squared up for the charge. And, I mean, the rest is history.
Yeah, that's not really a call that you've kind of gotten a lot this year. Most of the ones that have been kind of charges that could go either way, and I don't know that that one could have gone either way, but you haven't got the benefit of the doubt. What do you have to do in your mind to continue to make that play and to take that charge?
I don't know. Personally, for me, it's just, you know, always being in the right position at the right time. I tried to take a charge earlier in the half and went up to the ref, asked him what I could have done to get the call. And he said, you know, you had position, you were just moving your feet too much. So I guess I was in the right position at the right time. And earlier last week, coach wanted us to watch the new refereeing video that showed all of the guarding positions and block off positions and what have you when it comes to, you know, the tournament and how referees are going to call it from now on. So just watching that and keeping that stretch in my mind was one thing that, you know, made that play happen, I guess.
Interesting. Very good. Hey, so this season was pretty wild with how many players Cal Poly put on the floor. I saw something that said something like 40% of your team's minutes come off the bench. So it's not like a team where you're only playing 6 or 7 guys. How do you keep your mind right when there are some games when you play a lot more than other games? How do you kind of keep yourself prepared so that when it comes down to a game where maybe you will play 20 minutes, that's something that happens?
I don't know. It's kind of what coach keeps repeating all year long, you know, be ready and make the right play at the right time. And I don't know when my time is going to come, but when it does, I know, and I'm pretty sure my teammates know that it's going to be, you know, a good looking play. It's going to make something happen. So, I don't know if I'm going to play 5 minutes, 25 minutes or no minutes, you know, whenever I go into the game, I'm going to be ready to go and be ready to play. So
yeah, it would have been easy for your team to hang your head after the end of the conference regular season, coming in as the 7th seed, a losing conference record, maybe not where you guys expected to be. What kept you guys from hanging your head? What is it about your team or the guys on your team that kept your team kind of up and prepared to be able to make a historic run like you guys did in the conference tournament?
I don't know. I would just say family. Everybody on our team, you know, we like to joke around and, you know, mess with each other a lot. But at the end of the day, we all know that there's one purpose, and that's to go to the tournament. And we did that this year, and we've got everybody's back, you know, whether it's a freshman with a senior or, you know, a new guy coming in or, you know, one of the upperclassmen. It's always someone there to back you up. And that's how we've gone throughout the season. Whether we've gone down or we've been up, everybody knows what's going on, and we're all on the same page. So,
yeah,
I think that's how it goes.
This is kind of a ship that CE and Jamal and Kyle kind of have been driving all year. I feel like, you know, whichever way it's going. Talk a little bit about those guys and what their influence on you has been.
Oh well, you know, KO, CE, and Mal, they're our three seniors. They're our leaders. And this is my second year playing with them, and, you know, he's a great, great player. He can do almost everything: shoot, dribble, drive, post up. Mal is a team leader. You know, he's the captain. He's got the ball almost 90% of the time, and he calls the plays out, and he knows what to do with the team. And KO, I mean, I call him my dad, just kind of a joke between him and I, but I don't know. Each one of those guys has their own personal attributes that really contributes to the team and really brings morale and everybody closer together.
Yeah, one player who kind of stepped out along with you, I think, in that championship game, of course, is Ridge Shipley hitting that big three-pointer. Talk about Ridge's what kind of a guy is Ridge? His attitude, his play on the court. It seems like from the day I saw him step on the court at Cal Poly, you know, he's not lacking in confidence there. Am I correct?
Yeah, Ridge is a great kid. One of my better friends. I can say that. Ridge just, you know, he oozes confidence, and whenever he's on the court, he knows in his mind, and I know that he's going to make the right play. I have confidence in him no matter what. I mean, he's a point guard. After Jamal, he's going to be the one with the rock in his hand when it comes down to it. And he made the right play at the right time. Obviously in the championship game and put us into the lead and ultimately winning the whole title. So Ridge knows what he's doing, and as a freshman, that's really good to know that we can count on him for the next 4 years. So
you guys are playing Texas Southern on Wednesday night. I'll be there in Dayton, Ohio. Do you know anything about that team yet, or is that kind of what you guys are doing once you get there now?
We haven't really gone over anything as far as Texas Southern is concerned. You know, these past 4 hours have been ups and downs and trying to figure out everything, what we got to do, NCAA policies and everything. But, you know, as far as Texas Southern goes, we know about as much as you do right now. We got to film in a couple hours, go over them and, you know, dissect what they do with their offense and defense and see what they do. So
what does your next 48 hours look like? I mean, I'm sure you guys have practice tomorrow. I'm sure, you know, maybe you'll watch some of those other games maybe, or what does that look like as far as being in Dayton for you guys?
Just kind of relaxing and resting and mentally preparing for our game. Once we know what we need to do to win and beat Texas Southern, we're going to, you know, give everything that we can to do that. And, you know, once we get the chance to play, it's going to be an all out go. So
great. You posted or you tweeted or something that you'd got like five hours of sleep before last night. Did you get some sleep last night? And did you get some sleep on the plane today?
Yeah. I was, you know, just trying to settle down my nerves and the jitters and everything that's gone on. Got home last night after Firestone, just kind of relaxed, watched a little bit of TV, a little bit of packing, slept for a little bit, and then, you know, woke up, got to the bus, got out to Santa Maria, and then slept pretty much the entire plane ride over here to Dayton. So like I said, hasn't been that much sleep, but when I can get a little bit of shut eye, I try to.
So before the games, last question here, before your guys' games, you guys get in a huddle and either somebody's dancing in the middle. The last game, I saw something a little bit different. You guys were chanting yes. What does that come from?
Oh, that's Max. He's one of our most energetic guys on the team. He's always bringing, you know, that spurt of energy when we need it. And I don't know, Max just found that somewhere and started the chant. And once we all got going, it kind of oozed out, and you know, now we're all doing it. So
that's Max Bekowski, the freshman or sophomore guard there on Cal Poly. And who's the best dancer when they get in the middle there?
Oh, I don't know. I'd say it's a toss up between KO and Rich. They both got some moves to put out there, and you know, I myself try every now and then, but obviously it's a little awkward. So
yeah, you got to leave that dancing to the little guys, right?
Hey man, they have a little bit more moves than I do at the moment. So
right on. Well, Zach Gordon, I really appreciate you taking the time today, and good luck on Wednesday, man.
No problem, Owen. Thanks a lot, man.
We're back on the Fansmanship Podcast, part two of episode 91 with Tom Barquette. Tom, how's it going?
Going very well. Yeah. Owen, couldn't be a better time of the year.
So you guys got to Dayton, what, 3 or 4 hours ago, getting settled in now to prepare for your game on Wednesday night. Is that correct?
Yeah, we got to the hotel and, you know, got to experience the St. Patrick happiness as we were coming to the hotel. So we just kind of cruised in, and we just been, you know, lounging around. A lot of people milling around the lobby, and I took a little walk around. Honestly, I'm not even sure where we are in Dayton, Owen. But I just walked around the hotel and saw people creating a ruckus for St. Patrick's Day, and did an about face of the hotel.
You don't want to get caught up in a St. Patrick's Day ruckus, do you?
No. I'm just too old and too mellow for that.
So the last 48 hours have been pretty insane. I was just telling Zach Gordon, you know, 48 hours ago, he was kind of in between watching the women's game and starting their championship game against Northridge. What's the last 48 hours been like for you, Tom? You came back with the team on the bus on Saturday night, Sunday morning, got in, what, like 4 o'clock in the morning?
Actually, I did not come back with the team.
Okay.
I had driven myself, and so I came back. But as far as afterwards, though, you know, I was around the arena and everything. And when I was walking back to the hotel to my car, Malik Love and Ridge Shipley and Jamal Johnson just happened to be walking back the same time as I was. And there was Jamal. He was holding the trophy, walking back to the hotel. He had the net around his neck, and he had the trophy in his arms, and he was walking back to the hotel. So it was really cool to see that and just watch that senior who's just put in so much blood, sweat, and tears over 4 years, just to have that moment. I mean, it was his. And granted, it was his teammates for sure, but for that walk, it was his.
Yeah, Jamal was definitely on cloud nine, and he was not giving that trophy up.
No, and I wouldn't even make a humorous joke as to wanting to hold it, take it, whatever. I just looked over to him. I said, Jamal, you got a new toy. And he just said, yes, I do. And I was good, and it was neat to see him.
Yeah, he was hardly giving it up at the selection show either. Nobody else hardly could hold it. So you got back then, you know, I think I got back at like 2:30 or something on Sunday morning. You get back to SLO, you find out that, you know, they're playing in Dayton, and you got to kind of turn it around and get it going. It's one thing for an 18, 19-year-old to kind of snap into, snapping back. I drove back from L.A. yesterday, and now I'm going to, you know, Ohio tomorrow. Is it the same for you? Is it an easy thing? I know you got family and stuff, and these tournament things, you know, you just never know, right?
Well, now I know why they call it March Madness. I mean, it's there's a lot more to the madness than just enjoying the frenzy of the tournaments and the games and everything else. It's the preparation can be madness. And when you mentioned my family, that's a huge part of it. You know, I got a wife and two daughters, and, you know, I was gone for 4 days with a tournament, and I come home for about 24 hours, and then you know, they don't like it that bad. He's got to go again.
Right.
But they understand, and you know, they're old enough to know and of what's happening, and they can appreciate it. But do they just accept it? But it's on my end. It's really cool, Owen.
Yeah.
I mean, the three games in the Big West tournament, that's probably the three best games that I've experienced in all my years of broadcasting, from meaning to intensity to just flat out fun. Broadcasting those games when everything just lines up, it's been great. I mean, it's unparalleled to anything that I've experienced just in my time at Cal Poly or from minor league baseball to other schools that I've worked for. This has been as good as it gets.
I think you put the nail on the head when you said it just kind of lined up. I mean, I talked with at least two people, just friends of mine, and I don't talk to that many people about Cal Poly stuff outside of what I do for the site, but they said, yeah, this will probably be the year they win it. You know, they just kind of said it kind of flippantly. You know, I think if you're going in as a 3 or a 4 seed, they're like, yeah, here we go, maybe. But this year, somebody, you know, this will be the year we win it because there's no pressure. And you just saw them come out in that Santa Barbara game, and I mean, they just thrashed the Gauchos, came out and beat Irvine as well. And you saw, I think, and I want to ask you about it. You saw two players really kind of start to emerge into the exact roles that I think Coach Calero really wants them to play. One thing that I wrote about and that I think is that the first game that I saw Cal Poly play and in the Joe Calero era, it was really clear to me whether guys were outmatched physically or whatever, that they at least knew what their roles were and they could execute those roles with intensity. Whether that led to, a team winning or not, you know, you at least knew that these guys were comfortable in their roles and that they were being at least put in a position where they could be successful. And I think for the first time over these past three games, maybe for the first time this year, it looked like those guys were starting to meld into those roles, or at least accept or become comfortable with those roles. And I can kind of speak for the whole team, but especially two guys, Ridge Shipley and Zach Gordon, you know, in that championship game, really guys who Zach, you know, not scoring any points, not even taking a shot. And then Ridge kind of coming, not out of nowhere, but coming in with his, with his usual confidence in the last three games. Can you talk about those two players especially?
Well, I mean, Ridge, you've watched him play, and I've been able to see him most every game this year. And, you know, he's just flat-out feisty on the court. I mean, he stirs the pot. I mean, Ridge gets out there, and if there's any kind of little bump, any kind of little rub with another player, you know, his blood pressure goes up a little bit, and he doesn't like it. And he continues that defensively, and when he gets the ball offensively, when he first started playing this year, he dribbled a lot. And you can just see he's cutting down how much he dribbles. He's getting his teammates more involved, and he gets the ball back. And, you know, we saw what happened when he took that three to give Cal Poly the lead. But he's fearless, Owen. I mean, these young guys coming in, I don't really know why or how it comes about, but, you know, they jump right in.
Right.
I mean, they want to play. Maybe it's all about them and the one and done mentality. I don't know. But they just want to get out there and play and do their thing. And they just throw caution to the wind sometimes.
Yeah.
And they just do what they want to do and they play.
Right.
And
yeah,
and Rich, go ahead.
I was just going to say for Ridge, you know, you've seen that all year, exactly what you said, and guys kind of starting to figure out exactly where their role fits into the offense. Ridge always had the physical tools to maybe beat guys off the dribble. He's got a YouTube video with a million hits of him, you know, breaking high school kids down. You know, from when he was in high school. But you know, to be able to actually kind of start to integrate it with the offense, not just being kind of an individual dribbler.
Well, for sure. I mean, I got to look at that video too. I haven't seen it yet. I'm not one of the million hits.
Yeah. A million and one. The million and
million
first
and
will
one.
Be Tom Barquette.
But the other side, to go to Zach Gordon, and, you know, we're talking about Ridge Shipley, and you've heard so long for so many years about how college basketball, you know, it's guard-oriented, especially when you get to the tournament. But for the Big West tournament, it was the big men, you know, that made the difference. I mean, you go back to the first game, Joel Awich was the determining factor. I mean, I know when you win by 102, you get a lot of help from everybody.
Sure.
But Joel Awich was what he did with Alan Williams and got under his skin.
Yep.
When Joel starts rebounding a foot and a half, 2 feet above the rim, you know he's on his game, and he did.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was in the first game. In the second game, it was Brian Bennett. You know, it was the second part of the big men equation. And, you know, the game that he had, scoring and rebounding, he did things in that game, Owen, that he hadn't done all year from a physicality standpoint.
Yep.
You know, he used his shoulder. He used his body. He was squeezing rebounds. He was going after rebounds. He hadn't done that all year like he did that night. And then Zach Gordon with the defense he played on Maxwell against Northridge in the championship game. I mean, it's guard-oriented all you want, but it was Joe Calero's three big men that made the difference in that tournament run.
Yeah, I think people forget that the difference in the middle game they played against Santa Barbara was that Awich was starting to get squeezed out of the rotation at that point. Awich started the game at Santa Barbara and got one or two key steals right at the beginning of the game on entry passes. You know, was real active around Al Williams and really kind of helped Cal Poly get out to their lead. And then he played big minutes again in the tournament game against Santa Barbara. But the one that Cal Poly lost, I mean, he was the guy that was kind of getting squeezed as far as minutes because Eversley was kind of playing a lot more four and so he was definitely a factor. And in that tournament, it just comes down to matchups so often, right? In that Big West Conference tournament, and it seems like the Awich Williams one is for whatever reason okay for Cal Poly.
Yeah, and I think that was a big healthy byproduct is that the referees let them play.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike I had seen during the season. You know, because Joel just kept trying to front Alan Williams.
Right.
And then Alan would try to loop back around him, and then Joel would come back around him. And you got arms that fly him a little bit, and, you know, there's some, you know, some hip contact and shoulders. And the referees let him play, and by doing so, because Joel's quicker than Alan Williams.
Sure.
I mean, he's certainly not as stronger, and right. He's not as skilled in the low post as Alan Williams, but he used his quickness, his agility to stay in front of Alan Williams, and it just frustrated him to no end, and he fouled out with 7 minutes to go, and he was so off his game, and when he got frustrated, the rest of his teammates followed. And, you know, Joel Awich made that happen, but you know, the referees let him play a little bit more than they had in the past, and I think that was a big, big factor.
Yeah, and then kind of the last guy I want to talk about in terms of roles is David Nwaba. It's a player who's probably the most physically gifted, skilled, strong. I mean, you know, we had the luxury of watching Sean Lewis for a number of years here at Cal Poly, and Sean could jump out of the gym, but I don't think was ever as physically strong in his career as David is this year as a sophomore. Just upper body strength, lower body strength, just kind of the complete. You know, if you built a basketball player, you know, as a wing or a two guard, you'd start with a body and athletic ability like David Nwaba. But just in this past tournament, and I saw it in the Santa Barbara game. I was sitting at a restaurant watching the game at lunch, and in the past or throughout the season, David's been great at driving past one or even two guys. But when it gets to the third guy who challenges his shot, he's sometimes gone up and kind of forced it up anyway, even if it's from 4 or 5 feet with, you know, four hands in his way. In that Santa Barbara game, there were a few plays where he kicked it out, and he led the team in assists in that game. And I thought it was kind of a turning point for him in terms of understanding exactly what makes for success at this level. Can you talk about his play in the tournament as well?
Sure, and to your point, you know, what David did earlier in the season, you know, he was just an incredible highlight film, and no one knew how to, you know, how to guard him or what they were going to get. And then, you know, when, you know, film starts being exchanged or DVDs, whatever, they, you know, the antennas went up and they realized what they could do, you know, to stop David from just swooping to the hoop and just dunk it over somebody. But what he did against Northridge, and I saw it in that game more than any other, is that he would start to the basket, but he would stop in that, you know, 4 to 8 foot range, and he would just go vertical real quick. And there was no defense for that. And he was putting in those little one-handed, let it be a runner or kind of a jump stop little shot.
Yeah.
And that was something I really hadn't seen from David this year consistently. Every now and again, yeah, but he used it in that Northridge game, you know, to score a lot of points and to really keep them, get them confused. And if they decided to try to stop that, then he goes by you. And then or if he doesn't do that, he goes over you.
Exactly.
One or the other.
And
it's funny when you compare him to Sean Lewis. I said that earlier in the season to some of the coaches. I said, you know, who was the better highlight, David Nwaba or Sean Lewis? And, you know, you can get out a coin at that point. But as far as, you know, the offensive threat in the game, you know, I like David as much as I loved Sean, and you know, he was good on the low post. You know, Sean would kind of do that back arch into a defender to kind of get a feel to where he was. Sean would beat you on the low post, you know, pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, David's not so much like that. You know, he'll start from, you know, 30 feet and, you know, just end up dunking on you.
Yeah, I'd say by the time Sean got to be a senior, he had a much more developed offensive game as far as whether it was in the post or the ability to shoot the three. I think if David Nwaba, you know, ever develops any kind of an outside shooting game or a back-to-the-basket game or both, you know, you're talking about a guy who has all the athletic ability of anybody who's probably in this whole tournament, you know, as far as being able to physically get up at, you know, in, at and around the rim. So you guys made it to Dayton today. What do you do when there's a day in between games? Are you going over to the arena tomorrow to catch the game? How does that work for you?
I kind of follow the team around.
Okay.
You know, wherever they go and whatever they do, you know, let it be, except for meetings, I usually stay away from their, you know, their tape sessions and things like that. But yeah, if they go to practice or to shoot around, I'll follow them. And, you know, as far as tomorrow goes with the games and stuff, Chris Benetti and I might go over there together. And we'll all see how the schedule works out. And, because I'm kind of I'm too cheap to pay for a cab. So I just, if the bus doesn't go over there, then I usually can hang on the hotel. I'll watch it on TV or just do something.
Yeah.
You know, kind of simple. I just kind of pace myself. Well, when I, you know, these road trips, you know, they're like little vacations for me. And I just enjoy being around the team and, you know, and the coaches, you know, whether it be lunch or something like that. It's pretty casual. You know, I just enjoy the time away and can't wait for the ball game.
Got it. I think I just asked Zach Gordon a few minutes ago what he thought about or whether he knew anything about Texas Southern, and he said they were about to go into the film session tonight. Whatever Texas Southern looks like, what are your keys kind of for Cal Poly in this game? What do they have to do or continue to do or maybe even be better at to have a chance to win a game on this stage? I mean, I always said it's better to have I think if you're going to be a 16 seed, you may as well be in the play-in or the first round game in Dayton, because when you are in that game, you're the only game on TV. The whole night, you're it. And so, tell me about, what the keys are for Cal Poly, coming up here on
okay,
Wednesday night.
I will, but I want to, when you just said, you know, the new thing about playing in the, you know, it was part of the first four of the play.
Yeah. Yeah.
In you know, you're the only year in the national spotlight and,
yeah,
you know, you're not worried about everything else. You know what I love about this game more than anything else is that you get to play a winnable game.
Exactly.
You're playing a winnable game. If they would have gone right in as a 16 seed, you know, what are the chances? I mean, I know you still play it to the end and you play your heart out and, you know, you got a shot because it's sports.
Sure.
But we know what usually happens.
It's never happened
with
before.
With a 1 and a 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this game, it's winnable.
Totally.
It's certainly winnable. And then you got a chance with a little momentum. Then you play a 16 seed or a number one seed.
Right.
You know, we got Wichita State if we win.
Right.
But in terms of back to your question about what does Cal Poly need to do here, and I think you kind of squeezed in there, you know, where they need to get better. You know, Joe had said before the Santa Barbara game, he goes, we need to get 10% better in about six or seven areas. And they certainly got that and then some, you know, against the Gauchos, and they continued to get better in each game. If they get better for this one on Wednesday, it's not going to be close. You know, I'll tell one of my buddies, he was asking about a simple question what you asked, you know, what does Cal Poly need to do? I said, you know what? I said, when it comes down to one game, I says, I'll take Joe Calero against anybody for one game.
Right.
I mean, I love how he can prepare his team. I love how he works with them on and off the court. How he breaks down, you know, game tape, and he better than any coach I've seen, and this is even across, you know, the other benches, the opponents.
Right.
He's better than any coach I've seen at stopping the opponent's strength for one game, and that's why I like this game a lot for Cal Poly, is because of Joe and his staff You know, I will take him against anybody on, you know, somewhat equal terms. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you're going up against, you know, Duke for one game. Yeah, you know, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But against a game like this, no, I like Cal Poly's chances a lot.
It'll be really interesting to see what Joe does, you know, what kind of a tournament coach he is as far as the NCAA tournament. The conference tournament, you're really familiar with the other team. You've played them twice already. But the NCAA tournament's a little bit different in that it's a team that obviously Cal Poly's never faced before or had any thought about all season, I'm sure. Tom Barquette, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes here before the game. The game is Wednesday night in Ohio, in Dayton, and it's a 3:40 Pacific tip. It'll be 6:40 local time in Ohio. And thanks again, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Owen, anytime. My pleasure. Thank you.
See you Wednesday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out.